Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and it is once again time for our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. It's an opportunity for you to send your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com, and to our best ability, we will field your question and provide you with a discussion. Today, I'm accompanied, as usual, by Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin. She's a registered dietitian, and she's also earned an advanced master's degree in the field of nutrition. How are you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Very good. Very good. So we have a bunch of questions. Any breaking news stories this week? Anything exciting on the news front?
Nothing that's really... I don't think there was anything really worth mentioning, but we do have a very nice comment from Steve regarding your Intelligent Medicine newsletter article, Dr. Hoffman, about Frontline getting it wrong about supplements.
Right. And Steve, by the way, this is, I didn't know Steve.
Yeah.
Steve's a guy that I grew up with in Santa Monica, California. And we used to play together. You know, we'd have the play dates. I mean, it must have been like, I think I met him when I was 7 or 8. And, you know, we've been fast friends ever since. I don't see him very often because I don't get to the East Coast often, the West Coast often enough. He doesn't get to the East Coast often enough. But we've remained in contact, and he subscribes to the newsletter. So what's he have to say?
Terrific. He writes a very nice note. He says, thanks for sending this well-written rebuttal to the Frontline story that quite frankly got me upset. I've had a lot of trust in you and your recommendations of supplements for many years now, and I believe I've benefited tremendously. I feel great. I get a good cardio workout 7 days a week. I'm on no prescription meds. Every annual physical I get produces high praise from the doctor for being so healthy. They always tell me to keep doing whatever I've been doing, as it seems to work so damn well for me. Thanks, buddy, for all the great care you've provided all this time.
And that's very
lovely.
Gratifying, especially for
that's
a friend.
Lovely.
But it's you know, mm-hmm. It's all via remote control, and I hope it exemplifies the response of some of you out there who you know, do rely on our advice. And you know, if you heed the Frontline advice, you know, you'd stop taking vitamins altogether, because they say that A, they're potentially harmful, B, they're worthless, and none of you would be the beneficiaries of nutritional advice that I've been dispensing over years. So, you know, here's an example. This guy's, you know, 64, maybe going on 65. And he is an example of, you know, hopefully a whole cohort of people who derive encouragement from my newsletter and my weekly podcast. So it's very gratifying to hear that. I already sent him an email, and you know, we kind of traded information.
That's wonderful. All right,
makes it all worthwhile.
So
great.
Yeah. We've got a question here from Joan, and Joan writes, "Dear Dr. Hoffman, is there anything you can suggest that might somehow alleviate the snap, crackle, and pop symptoms of the so-called trigger finger syndrome? I'd very much appreciate whatever light you can shed on this condition."
Okay.
As always, thank you for your valuable assistance.
Okay, so what trigger finger is, for those of you not experienced it, is typically the fingers furl, and they're kind of hard to unfurl. And so this,
why is this happening so much?
It's a form of arthritis. It's a form of arthritis. It's a form of a proliferative joint disease where, the synovial membrane kind of, overgrows. And as a result, it kind of gets, your finger gets stuck in the curled position. And, you know, typically this will occur in the morning on awakening. You'll say, oh my goodness, my finger's all curled up. And then, you know, by, you know, a couple hours later, you'll have more mobility and your fingers will unfurl. Sometimes the trigger finger is in, you know, it can't be remedied by, you know, simply mechanically unfurling the fingers. It's stuck. And so the typical conventional treatment is to inject steroids into it. And that reduces the inflammation and allows the fingers to unfurl and straighten out. So, I mean, it's literally, it's like usually the index finger, but not always.
Uh-huh.
And it makes you, your hand look like you're about to pull the trigger on a gun. You know, it's like your trigger finger. But it could involve any of the other digits. And so from the standpoint of our form of medicine, since it's a form of arthritis, mm-hmm. it's an inflammatory disorder, we may want to use a lot of omega-3 fish oil, really load up a patient, lube, you know, do an internal lube job. Also, we would want to use perhaps anti-inflammatories like curcumin, boswellin.
Yes.
These are some of the things that might make a difference. And, you know, maybe some hyaluronic acid in some form because mm-hmm. that can help to lubricate the synovial membrane. And then there are dietary factors. You know, you can elaborate on that. What do we do for our patients with arthritis?
I guess the avoidance of nightshades, would that also apply to trigger finger?
Certainly could. But just the avoidance of junk and, you know, it, even just losing weight can help, you know.
Because
of the pro-inflammatory effect of excess body fat.
Right, right. And the nightshade family of vegetables, for those who don't know, are tomatoes and all tomato products, peppers of all kinds with the exclusion of black pepper, eggplant, white potatoes, and tobacco. A lot of people don't know the tobacco. So even mm-hmm. if you're exposed to secondhand smoke, that, you know, besides for the usual reasons of being bad for you, but that's also a nightshade.
Right.
Interestingly.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. You know, we were seeing more and more of this, and I was wondering, because I thought it was primarily index finger related, and I thought it was more a repetitive motion injury, you know, being on the mouse.
There may be some element
of
that.
On the computer, on the mouse.
Yeah, there may be some element to that. Or, you know, what they now have is iPhone thumb. You know, you see these kids, like, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes I'm in the elevator in my building. There's a lot of young kids in my building. And, you know, they don't look up at you. They don't say hello. They're just tapping away at their phones, like at breakneck speed with their thumbs. And it's like this amazing ability that they have to do it. And then
they get that tendonitis of their thumbs, don't they?
This is actually a form of hand injury, is that the overuse causes in the thumb joint.
Wow. Joan, we hope you feel better. Good luck with that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, even form of physical therapy, you know, sometimes squeezing a soft rubber ball can kind of rehab the fingers and remobilize them. That might be part of the comeback trail from that.
That's nice. That's good for stress, too.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a question from Randy. She writes, I've been taking low doses of prednisone for, 2 years. No Cushing symptoms or anything like that, to keep my asthma at bay. Now, about a year ago, I was diagnosed with Addison's disease.
Mm,
there are particular nutrients that would help me to rebuild my adrenals while helping to repair my damaged lungs because I've had to take asthma medications for almost 30 years?
Well, here's the deal. Let's talk about, you know, diseases of the adrenals, first of all. You know, there's two ways that the adrenals can go. They can go hyper, and they can produce too much cortisone, or cortisol in this case.
Yeah.
Cortisone is the synthetic. Cortisol is the natural. And when you produce, you can actually get Cushing syndrome. And Cushing syndrome usually is associated with hypertension, obesity, low potassium, and a typical appearance of the face, like, it's a steroid-like puffiness in the face, chubby cheeks, and sometimes what's called a buffalo hump, a hump in the back. And so this is a condition where there's excess cortisol. Some people who are obese have this anyway, just due to their obesity, and some people have it as a result of a tumor in their adrenals. That's too much. Now, she's talking about the opposite. She's talking about when there's not enough adrenal. And that's referred to as Addison's disease in an extreme form. We sometimes refer to a minor form of this as mild adrenal stress or adrenal burnout. But Addison's disease is when the adrenals are really flat. They're not producing anything. And that could be due to a couple of reasons. One is there are autoimmune diseases of the adrenals where the adrenals fail. And that is akin
to... Addison's is one of those, right.
Well, Addison's is an autoimmune disease, but to some extent, you can also have, I don't know, maybe a misnomer to call it classic Addison's disease. What she has is secondary adrenal insufficiency due to the steroids. The steroids actually put your adrenals to sleep because it's a little bit like, I don't know, if you have a, you know, a thermostat in a room and your furnace is working, but you bring a space heater into the room, the room is going to warm up. Your furnace is going to shut off because you've added another source of heat. That's exactly the analogy, is that when...
That's a great analogy.
Yeah, you know, when you're adding outside steroids that mimic the effects of the adrenal steroids, your own body down-regulates, and after a while, your adrenals actually lose the capacity to produce any adrenal hormone. So I think that's, you know, I don't know which is the two is happening or if it's a mixture, but certainly people who take steroids a long time, they get hooked on the steroids because their own adrenals start to become weakened and lose the capacity to make your own cortisol. So what do we do? Well,
I imagine Randy has no DHEA at all.
Exactly. That's, I was going to mention that, because DHEA is also suppressed by outside steroids. So one of the keys to helping these people is to give them DHEA. And they're, invariably, we'll measure the DHEA. It's going to be low. I mean, we like to measure first, but, you know, it's going to be low. And then is a male or female?
Female, 51 years old.
So a female would do well with, you know, anywhere from 10 to 25 milligrams of DHEA. And a male might require 25 to... as much as 100, but usually at around 50. So, but I'm not sure to what extent this person's adrenals have the capacity to recover, because in true Addison's disease, it's as if the adrenals are really gone. It's a little bit like when you have Hashimoto's, hypothyroidism. I mean, you can give iodine, you can give selenium, you can all these nice cofactors, tyrosine, that help make thyroid hormone, but the organ is damaged, and the organ will no longer produce the hormone. So what can you do? I'm not sure in this case, can we wake up the adrenals? And what is suggested is that you know, you may need to be on low-dose steroid medication, especially if you have an inflammatory disorder like asthma. You're hooked on it. And is there a way to get off that? Well, you know, you could sometimes taking high-dose quercetin can have anti-inflammatory effects, attacking the underlying problem, you know, dealing with allergies that may trigger the asthma, giving a lot of fish oil, giving ginkgo biloba, which helps asthma. Lately, we've been using black seed oil from black cumin. That it seems
cumin
to have a nice,
oil,
has a nice anti-inflammatory effect. Sometimes, you know, borage oil, primrose oil, is helpful in asthma, and magnesium is helpful for the spasm component in asthma. So, you know, maybe the problem can be better managed without steroids. But if indeed the adrenals are just done for, then you still need outside hormone. And actually, instead of prednisone, I prefer using hydrocortisone, because it's weaker. You can use lower doses. You can split the dose during the day. You know, that's sometimes you can get off gradually get off steroids by putting patients on progressively lower doses of hydrocortisone until we taper it off. And that's kind of a, you know, it's a little bit of an art to that, because, you know, with when you don't have enough adrenals function, enough cortisol, your blood pressure is low. You're very susceptible to infections. You're very susceptible to allergies and inflammation, because that's what cortisol controls. And you may have hypoglycemia too, really low blood sugar. So, and patients generally tend to be very, with Addison's disease, the tip-off. And my father actually had this condition from taking, again, from taking too many steroids. He had lung disease. And he always used to have such a wonderful, robust tan. And people would say to my dad, they'd say, "Harry, you look great. You know, you just got back from vacation." He said, "I wasn't anywhere." And you actually get a darkening of the pigment of your skin with true Addison's disease. And, you know, he used to always look at his wonderful bronzed skin. But no, that was a problem. And instead of progressively gaining weight, as you do with excess adrenals with Cushing's, you end up, no matter what you do, you just tend to waste away. You lose weight, and it becomes harder to maintain weight. So this is people, they tend to get thinner when this happens. And, of course, there's a fatigue associated with, you know, just lack of resilience in the face of stress tells us that people are low adrenal. You know, we did a wonderful podcast on adrenal function with Dr. Tom Williams about 6 months ago, and I recommend that if you Google his name, within, there's a search box at drhoffman.com. You'll find a wonderful podcast on that subject. And or you can just Google it on Google.
Terrific.
Just Dr. Williams Hoffman Adrenal. That'll probably get you there.
Yeah. Wow. Randy, we wish you the best of luck. All right.
It's a kind of a... Okay. You know, and typical, though, in patients who've been on steroids a very long time, it's hard to get off.
Okay. We've got a question from Kathy, or it's actually more like a comment. She had an osteopenia diagnosis. She started taking strontium plus enzymes, exercise, diet, DHEA, and then 2 years later, her bone mineral density came up with osteoporosis. She wasn't taking Ostera, so now she's considering taking Ostera. She had stopped taking the strontium. Do you have any comments? Dr. Hoffman, if I may begin,
sure.
We don't know how old Kathy is,
yep.
And I know that we don't, and I know from you, I don't either, we don't prescribe strontium for osteopenia,
right?
But more for osteoporosis.
Exactly.
I would also wonder what her vitamin D level might be.
Right.
And if she was, she doesn't mention taking any vitamin D, or
so
I would also wonder,
so let me get this straight.
I also want to know if Kathy is underweight.
Yeah, let me get this straight. She had osteopenia. And then she took strontium on her own. We don't know how much she took or what brand.
Right.
And then after taking it for a while, her bone density got worse? Is that what she's saying?
Yeah. After 2 years, she had osteoporosis.
Right. Well, that's unusual. Strontium is about 98% effective for either halting the progression of bone loss. At worst, it'll halt it. And at best, we'll see dramatic increments in bone density. So there's something funny going on here that we don't know about, you know, such as what you suggested, inadequate levels of vitamin D, or perhaps, you know, some really serious nutritional deficiency, or some kind
maybe
of hormonal problem.
Magnesium.
Hormonal problem, you know, like maybe a complete cessation of hormone production in a woman, you know, menopause, but a dramatic, sometimes women. You know, menopause is not always the same for women. Some women retain modest amounts of estrogen even after menopause. Other women go through a really precipitous drop in their hormones. Other women may have an inflammatory condition, like rheumatoid arthritis can really accelerate bone loss because it's an inflammatory condition. So I would want to know all those things, take a detailed history. And hey, guess what? You know, like with a lot of things that I talk about here on the program, we give out so much advice here, and you know, most of it is like pretty good preventive advice. If it was 100% successful, you and I would see nobody, right? Nobody would come to the Hoffman Center. What I'm noticing is that we are seeing more and more cases where people have already followed the usual advice, and for some reason they've not been successful, so they need more fine-tuning. Yeah. So we're getting more challenging cases at the Hoffman Center. It's easy because there's so many, not just mine, but there's many resources out there that are telling you what to do. And people are, you know, people are trying this diet and that diet and gluten-free. And, you know, they've tried, you know,
and
taking vitamin D and they
and
take
you know
magnesium.
What
all
and
these
what
good
occurs
things.
To me is, does she have gluten sensitivity or celiac disease?
That
I mean, we don't know if she has a malabsorption syndrome.
Yes, that too.
We don't know.
That too. And that's important to work that up, because if we can't explain bone loss and it progresses, well, maybe there's a problem in the gastrointestinal tract with absorption. Maybe this is a person who has GERD and is taking an acid-blocking medication. That's really common.
Oh, that's
You know, there's just any,
Prilosec, Nexium,
any number
all of those
things
can cause osteoporosis.
Yeah, in the course of sitting down with somebody, you know, for, you know, 45 minutes or an hour, we can find out a heck of a lot about what maybe these, you know, maybe the,
And she could have the opposite problem with her adrenals. Her cortisol could be too high, which will not only cause skin thinning, but bone thinning.
Yes, that too.
Yep. As well. So there's a lot of things to look at here.
Yes. So.
Yeah. Kathy,
sorry,
that would all be part of a consult for you.
Right. And and just to put in a plug here, I mean, this is actually something that if she comes as a patient, she can see me. And obviously she'll see you as part of that visit. Or alternatively, if she, you know, it's a more economical way of accessing the expertise that we have, she could do perhaps a phone consultation with you. Just call the Hoffman Center for information and find out. Okay. All right.
Okay. Kathy, thank you for your question, and best of luck to you.
Yep.
All right. We've got a question from Michael. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, recently several studies have indicated that too low and too high levels of vitamin D3 are associated with an increased risk of falls in cardiovascular disease. Interestingly, the high doses were only about 1,000 to 2,000 units daily, which is not much. Most integrative MD suggests that 50 to 90 nanograms per deciliter of D3 is best to maintain optimal health. I'd appreciate your comments.
Actually, it's not 50 to nanograms of 25 hydroxy vitamin D. That's a measurement.
Thank you.
D3 is the supplement. The measurement measures 25 hydroxy. Okay, so look, this vitamin D phenomenon is very interesting because clearly we had a problem where a lot of people were walking around with inadequate vitamin D. And there have been a lot of papers that show that vitamin D can be therapeutic. And, you know, as I shared with you in the last podcast, and I'll just repeat that, you know, they looked at people with vitamin D deficiency and they gave them three levels of vitamin D. They gave them 1,000, they gave them 5,000, or they gave them 50,000 once a week, which amounts to 7,000 a day. And it was virtually impossible with 1,000 a day to correct a deficiency. The vast majority, you know, well over 90% of people who just took 1,000 a day remained in a deficient state. I mean, they went up a little bit, but just by a few points. It took 5,000 a day to get about 70% of people into the optimal range, which was above 30. And with 50,000 once a week for 8 weeks, you did a little better. You're about 75% of people. But still, there were still some people who didn't achieve adequacy. So clearly, there are benefits sometimes to high-dose vitamin D. But, you know, I got to say, I'm open and I look at studies that sometimes suggest that there may be a sweet spot for vitamin D, that maybe we shouldn't be overzealous with vitamin D, and that there may be a downside to taking too much. You know, one of the clues is from physiology, and we know it's not that cavemen didn't take 50,000 international unit vitamin D pills once a week. However, they did walk around without clothes on, and the skin is adapted to make vitamin D to the tune of, in the sun, you know, the average lifeguard makes about 7,000 a day. So these high doses that we synthesize on our own are not unheard of. I mean, there are seasonal variations, obviously. In the winter, you're not going to make as much. I'm a little wary of studies that suggest that supplementing vitamin D within a healthy range are going to create problems. There's so much conflicting information on that. And I know that there are some people who are very gleefully seizing on this information to suggest that this whole vitamin D thing is a big fad. But I think the net benefits of vitamin D, especially for certain populations, you know, MS, for example, it turns out 10 or 15,000 a day is safe and really helpful. You know, so certainly for autoimmune diseases, can be helpful. Now, on this falling thing, is it very interesting? Because there's been a lot of studies that suggest that, you know, how do you break a bone? Well, number one, you have thin bones. So we're fixated on the DEXA test. Then we look at the number, you know, what's your DEXA, you know, T-score, blah, blah, blah. But actually, what's going to determine whether you're going to break a bone is whether you have, whether you're ungainly, whether your legs are weak, whether you're going to fall. So vitamin D seems to help reduce osteoporotic fractures in two ways. One, it helps to strengthen the bone and increases the DEXA score, but also it may increase leg strength according to some studies. So vitamin D deficient women have less good leg strength than adequate vitamin D women. I guess there's a study out there, and you may be familiar with it, that suggests that really high dosing of vitamin D, you get diminishing returns. In other words, there's kind of a sweet spot in the middle.
You know, there are high doses. You know, as Michael says, and I'm reading this question a little differently now, the so-called high doses were only about 1,000 to 2,000 units daily. That only tells me that they were still in the low range.
Yeah, so exactly. This may be,
that's not enough to boost anything,
This may mean that they're so fearful of vitamin D that they think, oh, my God, that's an astronomical dose. And because that dose didn't help, that they think it was deleterious. I don't know. I think we ought to keep it. Look, I'm open-minded. I keep my eye open because I can adapt and change course in the face of information that runs counter to what I once believed. I think that's how that's how you have to be in this field. You have to have an open mind. You have to be scientific.
Absolutely.
And you have to stay abreast of findings. And you can't be wedded to some belief system,
mm-hmm.
you know, you know, some people are in this field, you know, people who say low-fat,
vegan. That's true. And you know what? I'm so glad you said that, because it's not a belief system. It's not a faith-based system. This is all about science.
Yep.
And for those practitioners who aren't scrutinizing it and doing their job properly, hello. I mean, that's really what this is all about.
Yep.
Yeah.
I tell you what, we're going to break, but I'm going to pull up a nice saying mm-hmm. for you on this subject for part two. And what can we expect in part two in terms of questions?
Is it safe to roast nuts? What does it do to the omega-3 oil content in the nuts?
Okay, a very good question. And mm-hmm. a quote on the subject of self-evaluation and modesty in terms of one's mastery of facts when we return. Mm-hmm. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoppen, today with Hoppen Center nutritionist Layla Mutin. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, and we'll be right back with more of Intelligent Medicine.